And that was Tears from the Red Stick Ramblers in their album Alchemy. I love that group. They are so genuine. They don't play instruments that are all electrical. It's just from the heart and from the wood. And I thought that that range of emotions that they elicited just from that really short snippet right there seemed to fit with our guest tonight, because he also elicits emotion through music. His name is Lane Arye, and I'm hoping I'm pronouncing his name right.
You are.
Thank you. I am terrible at names. And Lane does a technique called process work, and we're going to be talking to him about that in a moment. It's called Unintentional Music. And this is Sherry Edwards. I'm your host for the Sound Health Show on BBS Radio. And for this next hour, I'm just delighted that you could join us for a bit of conversation designed to provide options and information for self-health. Boy, it seems like it's been a long time since we've been together. Last year, in fact. I don't think there's been any shows until first part of December. So I missed you guys. I missed the mail. And we hope to hear from some of you tonight with questions and comments. For the audience participation part of this, the number is 877-876-5227. In Canada, 888-810-8322. And if you guys want to dial direct, it's 530-876-3222. And we will be monitoring SoundHealth at soundhealth.org. If you want to send in emails, we know a lot of you tie up your computer or your phone lines listening to the show, so you can just jot us off email, and that'll take care of it. You can also reach us at radio@vocalprofiling.com. Let's see, we don't have announcements tonight. But I thought I'd tell you a little bit about what we've been doing since Don and Doug, the producers of the show, have been telling us there's incredible increases in the number of listeners. So a short review about what this show is about and what we want to accomplish tonight is probably in order. And I also want to remind you to go to Ask the Experts on bbsradio.com. Every person on BBS Radio, well, maybe every person, I think a lot of us, have our own little slot there where you could ask questions and post things, and we've got a lot of information posted on our site. So bbsradio.com, and it's on the left side, Ask the Experts. So you can join us on the show with subjects that you would like to talk about. If you have suggestions, get in touch with us. If you'd like to be on the show, you can get in touch with us also. So for those of you who know the show, you know a lot of times we give out paper and pencil information, so you might want to grab that, because I'm sure our guest is going to give you lots of wonderful information about helping yourself. For the newcomers, I said I would explain what we do. Well, at Sound Health Research, we do vocal profiling. We take a very short sample, 30 seconds of someone's voice, either in the office or they send it to us online, and we look at that 30 seconds by way of the hidden codes of the frequencies of the voice. Now, this month, we've been working with idiopathic seizures, and a lot of those referrals are coming from doctors and well, from the show. And idiopathic just means that they don't know where the seizures are coming from. Well, we've done about 30 people in the past month, and we have found out that seizures, grand mal and petite mal seizures, like epilepsy, have their root, or most of the time have their root, in glutamic acid, glutamine. That's the commonality. So we're able to look at what the faults are in someone's voice for glutamine. And with some of the people that we're seeing, if they don't have the amino acid receptor and some don't have the enzyme needed to use glutamine. And one of the biggest things we found is these people are eating a lot of aspartame, which is the same frequency as glutamine, the glutamine, and they also use MSG, monosodium glutamate. So that was causing a lot of their seizures. Now, we do this very logically with computers, looking at these vocal codes, you know, being and frequencies beyond the words, or actually beneath the words, too. But our guest tonight has this very unique perspective. I have to admit, I'm not familiar with it. His book did not arrive in time for me to look it over, but I've combed his website. And it's unintentional music. So if you ask an adult if they can sing, they'll say, oh, of course not, you know, I can't carry a tune. But you ask any little kid, and they'll say, sure, and they'll start off with the Barney song or Yellow Bananas or something, and they just let it go. And I think that our guest wants to take us back to that framework where we can release our inhibitions and just make sounds, whatever they are. In looking at the web, this background for what's going on here, Lane Arye is a musician focused on the music that people do not intend to make. Applying the ideas of process work developed by Arnold Mendel, Lane has been teaching students around the world how to awaken their creativity using music as a starting point, but including all art forms and ways of expression. You may not consider yourself a musical person, but this book can help you find a wealth of unsuspected creativity. And there's a quote here from Arnold Mendel, an utterly new approach, musical mistakes, blocks, disturbances, accidents, it's all in there for us to use. Lane, welcome to the show. Tell me your background and how you got into this. This is fascinating.
Thanks so much for having me. I was originally singing jazz in the San Francisco Bay Area and realized that it wasn't really doing it for me anymore. I was in touch. I knew all of what to sing, how to sing, but I wasn't any longer in touch with what was moving me to sing. I knew all the grammar, but I couldn't form a sentence. And I got in touch with Arnie Mendel, who's an incredible, he is the developer of process work, and he had been a Jungian analyst and then developed process work out of that work and many other things. And I went to Zurich, Switzerland to study with him and learned about process work, and at the same time, my teachers there, including Arnie, encouraged me to bring music together with process work, and that's how I developed unintentional music.
That's a very apt title, process work. So you take people through their stuff?
Yeah, absolutely, and we follow the process of what's happening rather than thinking that there should be some kind of a program for people, but we follow the details of the momentary things that are happening in a person's process.
This is going to show my ignorance about jazz singing and music. From when I hear jazz, it's like singing. A lot of it is just syllables and just like let loose and let go. Is that true, or is that all planned, and is that like process work?
Well, in the moment, I don't only sing jazz. I also sing blues and gospel and original things. I think there's a lot of, in both jazz, in music in general, and in process work, there's a lot of structure to learn that allows you to be free. And also in the work that I do in unintentional music, it seems from the outside, a lot of people have said going to my seminars, it seems like it's just magic that things are just happening. But there's a lot going on in the background, a lot of background structure that you can follow. So it's the same thing with jazz.
Do people have to be with you to have this done?
Actually, I do this also on the telephone with people all over the world. I have clients in Paris and Tokyo and Australia and all over the place.
So you just encourage them on the phone to let go? Is this kind of like, it can't be like primal screaming, that's like too deep. Sounds like yours is gentle stuff.
Well, it's not just letting go. It's not just about letting go. It's about following what you don't mean to be happening. It's following the unintentional. It's following the part that we don't intend, that we're not as much aware of, that we think of as not me. And it's letting that part come out.
Can you describe a session?
Sure. I was working, for instance, with a professional flute player, and she started out by playing this beautiful meditative Japanese piece, and it was just gorgeous, and she had this rich, full tone. But she was disturbed by this one aspect of her tone. It was a little bit breathy. So if there was like a like that, and then there was a over it, and I can't do those both at the same time, but you can imagine that beautiful tone, but a little bit breathy. So she said that she had been to many, many teachers in all of her years of playing professionally in orchestras, and no teacher had been able to help her, and no amount of practice had been able to get rid of that breathiness. So I suggested the opposite of what everybody else had suggested. I suggested that she let herself play even more with more breathiness. So she started to do that. We can say that that's the unintentional thing that was happening. So she did the unintentional thing more, and then she said that when she played with more, we noticed that when she played with more breathiness, there was also more of a vibrato. So it started to vibrate. So it sounded like, like that. And so that was the next unintentional thing. So I asked her to do more vibrato. When she did more vibrato, she said that she didn't have enough breath to do that. So I said, okay, play with even less breath. That's the next unintentional thing. And pretty soon, it started sounding terrible. I started thinking, oh no, I'm like ruining this woman's playing, but I relaxed and I just let that go on. And she said, so I said, make it sound even more like that. And she said that her embouchure was sloppy. The way that her lips meet the flute, that started to get sloppy. So I said, let that get even more sloppy, because that's the next unintentional thing. And then she tried to play and no sound came out of her flute. And I thought, oh no, there I've done it. I've ruined her playing. 10 minutes ago she played so beautifully and now she can't play at all. But I just waited. And she started to cry. And she said, I have no voice. I've never had a voice. And she started really to cry. So I said, okay, let yourself play the one who has no voice. And she started to play this mournful, sorrowful melody. It was really sad, and the people, it was in a workshop, and the 20 people in the workshop were really moved by that. But then suddenly she stopped, and I said, why did you stop? And she said, well, there's this part of her, she heard a voice that said that she shouldn't play stuff like that. So, and then she got really mad. Her face got all red, and she said, that's why I have no voice, because that voice in my head is always shutting me up, and I'm so mad about that. So I said, okay, play again that mournful melody, the one that's has no voice, and then play the stopper, and then play your reaction to the stopper. And that was incredible, actually. First, she played with lots and lots of feeling and almost no tone, that same mournful tune as before, and then came a loud, sudden note followed by silence. And then she began to play this frenzy, wild, violent, angry, ecstatic torrent of notes. It was passionate and intricate. It was resonant and complex. It came out of her like a volcano erupting, like a machine gun. It came out of her like an ecstatic dance or like the spit that was flying from her lips. It was just incredible. And she stopped, and she stood there for a long time with her mouth open. And she said she had never played like that before. And she had no idea it was possible to play like that.
With all of her being.
Yeah, exactly.
This is like crash and reboot.
Yes, exactly. She said she had no idea that all those feelings were inside of her, much less that she could express them with her flute. She didn't know that part of herself or her music.
Do you think you giving her permission to be lousy released all of this constrained entrapment she was in?
I think that's only part of it. I think the deeper thing is that following the details of her unintentional sounds got her in touch with something much deeper inside of herself, got her in touch with something inside of her that was trying to express itself, and that had been expressing itself through her breathiness, but she didn't realize it. She just was trying to erase that breathiness. But there's something inside of her that was trying to express itself, and it was both her emotions and a different kind of music that wanted to be played through her.
So, like, she had her technique, and you just married her inner self with what she already knew.
That's right.
Woo.
That's right.
Do you have to have an instrument to do this?
No, I do this with people with voices all the time.
And we don't have to know how to sing anything. We can just blah, blah, blah.
Oh, you don't have to know how to sing anything. People come who are totally tone deaf or who say that they're totally tone deaf. I had this one woman come who was so upset. She had never sung since she was a little girl because her mother was a choir director. And her mother constantly humiliated her. How could a daughter of mine not be able to sing when I'm the choir director? And so she said the worst thing was singing in public, singing when other people were singing because she couldn't keep the tune. So we had everybody in the workshop singing a childhood melody, and she was singing along with it, and she kept getting the wrong tune. It was absolutely right that she wasn't actually able to keep the tune. Except that this time, whenever she would go flat, in other words, she was a little lower than she quote-unquote should have been, I would go even lower. And whenever she would go high, I would go even higher. And pretty soon, the rest of the participants in the seminar were quiet, but she and I were doing this very weird kind of avant-garde thing where we're going, boop, 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 and we're doing this improvisation together, and it was wild and beautiful, and it freed her musical creativity for the first time in her life.
Sounds like a bit of jazz.
That was definitely pretty jazzy, yeah.
Oh, this is an awesome technique, and you did that in a workshop. Do you do people alone?
Oh yeah, very often.
Where do you do workshops, and what's that like?
I have done workshops all over the world. Workshops, what's it like? I've done all different kinds of workshops, actually, using unintentional music. I've done workshops on stage fright. Sorry, I had to translate that because I do those workshops usually in German. And there it's called Lampenfieber. So
that
I had to translate
like
that for
fright.
A second. Excuse me?
Lampenfieber?
Lampenfieber.
Like
it's lamp fever. That's what they call it in German.
Okay.
Lamp fever, because you're there in front of the bright lights, so they call it lamp fever.
Mm.
And that can be pretty wild too, working on stage fright. I've done workshops with musical ensembles, working with the conflicts that happen between the people in the musical groups, and bringing that conflict out in the music. That's been a pretty wild thing.
You let music be the voice of their emotions and their expressions.
Absolutely.
Hundreds of people in the workshop. Two people in the workshop.
I've had probably my biggest unintentional music workshop was probably 80 people, but usually it's more like 20 people or something like that. That allows. I've done a lot of work at the Conservatory of Music in Zurich in Switzerland, and there's usually 30 musicians there.
Well, let's talk about how people can contact you. You do private sessions.
Mm-hmm.
Do you do those around the world also?
I do private sessions with people around the world, as I say, on the telephone. And in the moment, I have an 18-month-old baby boy and a little girl who's due in April. So I'm staying closer to home these days.
Well, we understand why.
Yeah, I'm very happy about that.
Important to people in this station. Where this station is so unique. It's like a great big family of people who want to make a difference.
Yay.
And so they understand about family and babies.
Yeah, I actually read on your website that that you saved a daycare center over there in Ohio, and so good for you.
I didn't know that was on my website. I'm going to have to check that out. How do people get in contact with you? Do you want them to look at your website?
My website is www.processworklane.com.
L-A-N-E.
L-A-N-E. Processworklane, all one word, .com.
And it's very succinct and very easy to go through, folks.
And I've got a phone number if people are interested in that.
Yes, do that.
It's 415-558. No, actually, wait a second. I'm giving the wrong number. Let's start that again. It's 510-558-8805.
And you actually have two offices.
Yeah, I've got an office in Berkeley, California, and in San Rafael, California.
Okay, and how long is the waiting list to see you if people want to get in touch?
Well, they should check me out and see if I have any availability.
Can they access you through email?
Email, yeah. It's on my website. It's just Lane, that's L-A-N-E, at processworklane.com.
Okay, but they have to be aware that there's a new baby coming and be...
There'll be a month there where I'm not going to be working, but that's not yet.
For a typical private session with you, somebody would come in and what? Would you interview them first to see what they need, or would you access them through their voice and just that intuition? How would that happen?
Well, usually I talk to them and find out what they're interested in. But I don't only do unintentional music stuff. I do process work in general, and that's got all kinds of different applications. But for this unintentional music stuff, I'm interested in what is it that somebody wants to work on? Is there a quality of their voice that they don't like? Is there a part of their music that they're interested in or that they feel blocked in? Do they have a creative block? I work with creative blocks of all kinds. Is there a musical technique that they're having trouble with? And not that I know every musical instrument. I certainly have never played the flute, but I was able to work with that flute player on her breathiness. So find out what they're interested in, what they're having trouble with, and then just as process work sounds like, you follow the process.
One of the stories on your website is about an office that you went in and they had a lot of conflict with new staff and old staff, and so you do much more than what the person wants to come out from them, but you do group process as well.
I do a lot of group process and conflict facilitation. I've together with dear friend and colleague Arlene Odergon, we were working in Croatia. We did a six-year project for the UN High Commission for Refugees in Croatia, working with Serbs and Croats and Muslims after the war. And we actually just got back from doing a follow-up there. And so, yeah, I do a lot of work like that and work with organizations and communities here in the Bay Area as well.
Are you allowed to talk about that? That sounds phenomenal.
Oh, yeah, I'm happy. I love talking about that stuff.
Tell us a bit about that project.
Well, the first time that we went there, that was in 1996. That was 1 year after the war ended. And by the way, I wrote, together with Arlene, we wrote an article about that that people can find on our on my website. So if you go to the...
What's the title?
It's called Transforming Conflict into Community.
Cool. Okay.
So we published that in a book and in a journal. So if people go to my website and go to the page that says Lane's book, then it'll show also other articles there, and people can click on that and just download that article. But so the first time we were there, as I said, it was a year after the war ended, and we were sitting in a room with 40 Serbs, Croats, and Muslims, and we were invited there to work on ethnic tension. And everybody there said, well, we don't have any tension. We love each other. What are you talking about? Why are you trying to make us have conflict? And we said, well, wasn't there just a war here a year ago? And they said, yeah, but that was those other people, those intolerant ones that are out there. We who are in here, we're the tolerant ones. We're the humanitarians. We love each other. And they're saying we love each other, but they're, you can kind of see their jaws clenching slightly. And the Serbs, and during the coffee breaks, the Serbs go off with the Serbs, and the Croats go off with the Croats, and the Muslims go off with the Muslims from Bosnia. And so it wasn't just all lovey-dovey. And it was a four-day forum that we did there. And finally, on the afternoon of the third day, one woman had the courage to say very mildly, she said, I feel a little bit more comfortable with people from my ethnic group. And it was like a whirlwind had been unleashed. Everybody started screaming, I knew I couldn't trust you. And people started screaming at each other. And my friend and I looked at each other and it's like, thank God it finally came out. So we asked them, so what? It's right, it's like the unintentional thing that happens, right? If you look at that, like that's music that's going on, suddenly the unintentional thing comes out. Somebody says the forbidden thing. So we said, why can't you trust her? And then the story started coming out, because her kind did this to me. And then somebody else said, yeah, but your kind did this to my sister. Oh, yeah, but your kind killed my brother. And started coming out. But people weren't listening to each other anymore about that. They weren't listening to each other yet, I should say, about that. They were just each one telling about their own pain and their own stories. But Arlene and I were saying, well, we hear you, we hear you. And then finally, somebody from Sarajevo was there. And there were a group of people from Sarajevo. And people turned to the people from Sarajevo and said, you guys, you think you're better than us. You're walking, because people from Sarajevo, I don't know, you may or may not know, Sarajevo was an incredible, multicultural, cosmopolitan city. And the people there have an incredible ease and humor, and it's incredible. And sorry, I keep using the word incredible there. But... so the people looked at the people in Sarajevo and says, you guys are like a clique. You don't hang out with the rest of us.
Your voice gives off the frequency of dopamine. Do you know that?
Of dopamine.
Dopamine. Like, everything's okay. We're wonderful. I'm going to have a big question here. How much of the world's problem is hinged on what you just described in a tiny place, but I think this is worldwide, that people put on this pretend face. And it's just an awesome technique you have to break through that. What do you think would happen if everybody in the world could practice this?
I think that is the answer. I mean, the answer. That's an incredibly inflated thing to say. But I think that is really one of the things that's really needed in the world. Just like when you just said that, people are pretending, put on a pretend face. I wanted to bow down to you when you said that. But the thing is that it's not just that we put on a pretend face to others. It's that we put on a pretend face to ourselves.
Absolutely.
That we don't know it ourselves. That woman playing the flute didn't know that stuff was inside of her.
We have, I refuse to be commercial, but I got to bring something in here. We have a computer program called InVoice, not IN, just InVoice. And it gives people 4 or 5 pages of their real stuff. It's the vocal codes that they can't hide from. You and I need to partnership someplace in doing this. But back to you, I want to know how people can learn this, if they can do it for themselves. I want to know about your book. Oh, where do I start?
Well, I would love to tell you all those things. Let me just very quickly say the end of that story.
Yes.
Because just saying up to that in that story is it robs people of the possibilities. So people then said, the people from Sarajevo then said, it's not that we keep ourselves away. You don't let us in. You keep us at a distance. You don't touch us. And a woman who was from Zagreb sat down next to this woman, and she said, you know, you're right. I keep you at a distance. As a matter of fact, a year ago when Sarajevo was being bombed, not bombed, but when there was a huge siege in Sarajevo, I was sitting safe in Zagreb, and I watched you on television, and I kept you at a distance, and I'm sorry. And those women were able to look at each other and cry together and realize that we all, in a sense, everybody in the room was crying at that point, because we realized that we all, in a sense, keep ourselves at a distance. We watch the problems on TV. The whole world watched as Sarajevo was under siege. And secretly thinking, I'm glad it's them and not us.
The emotion that you bring to me, and I think in pictures, is here's nation to nation, and they met with you group to group. They became person to person.
That's right.
Cell to cell, and
that's
then
right.
Soul to soul.
That's right. And that night, there was a spontaneous party, and suddenly there were like 10 bottles of local wine and a guitar appear out of nowhere, and everybody was singing together. And everybody was singing, spontaneously singing all of the songs. Everybody was singing the Serb songs. Everybody was singing the Bosnian songs. Everybody was singing the Croatian songs, because they all knew each other's songs, because 10 years before they were all part of the same country and intermarried with each other. So the love that they had professed at the beginning was there. But we had to first go through the mistrust in order to get to the trust. We had to go through the difficulties in order to really get to the real love in the background.
I'm going to ask a global question, then we're going to get very personal again. If this was to happen in groups, what would happen to our legal system? Would there be a lot of divorces? Because I think what you're bringing out is integrity and often people being authentic. And in marriages, a lot of them are kept together by pretend stuff.
Well,
so what would happen globally?
I think, like you say, marriages are kept together by pretend stuff. But like in this story that I just said, it first looks like it's going to break apart, but then it gets even closer afterwards in an authentic way. So I'm not sure that some marriages may break apart, but some marriages might find a new life and be able to actually really have the love that they're professing to have in the first place.
In your book, do you teach people how to do this personally?
Absolutely.
I've got
at the end of every chapter, there's a section saying, try this, and with very specific exercises about how to do these different things. Not necessarily with conflict. This particular book is about unintentional music, so it's about doing it with yourself, following your own things that are inside of you.
Can you give us a little blip about your book and what it's called and where to get it and when it's going to be available? And
it's called Unintentional Music, Releasing Your Deepest Creativity. And maybe I should spell my name because it's kind of an unusual one. My first name is Lane, and my last name is spelled Arye. And it's available at... If it's not available at your bookstore, you should tell them to order it and that they should carry it. And you can also get it on Amazon or at the publisher, which is Hampton Roads Publishing.
Can they get it from your site?
I am not... really a businessman, but mm-hmm. if they go to my site, there's a link to get to Hampton Roads where you can get it.
Yeah, we'd like to put a link on our site. The more I talk to you, the more fascinated I am by how this process happened. But give us a little teaser or maybe a short summary of what's in the book that will make everybody rush out and buy it for themselves so everybody can have this.
Well, that's very sweet of you. There's a little very accessible introduction about process work that I call Riding the Hidden Wind. And there are parts about how to actually listen to your own unintentional music and other people's unintentional music. There's something about what it would be like to use this kind of work in music lessons. And there's a chapter about using this with your own voice called Freeing the Hated Voice, because a lot of people don't like the way they sound, and it's this chapter is about helping people to find something in the thing they don't like about their voice, find something actually that's beautiful in that. And it's actually very similar. That particular chapter is kind of similar to the work that you do. It's like, what is there specifically in somebody's voice that really shows something deep about who they are? And then there's a chapter about how to do this with all different kinds of art forms. And there's something about creative blocks. It's called Loving the Block and Other Surprising Ways to Unlock Your Creative Potential.
Should you do this? Let's say you have a problem with somebody at work or a boss, and you're doing this on your own and you're facilitating change, should you buy them a copy too?
That sounds great. Absolutely.
And do you think couples should do this together? Because if one's going to do it, is that going to cause a conflict?
I don't know if it will cause a conflict if one does it together, but I think if one member of a couple is continually changing and growing, and the other one is not, I think that that can cause a conflict. So I think that would be great to have couples doing this together. On the other hand, if you give your partner this book to say, grow, you idiot, that may not work.
I don't know why that just struck me. So must be something in my own life going on.
Well, let's talk about you.
I just go with the flow, you know, whatever's happening at the moment, and it leads me where I need to be. And if I'm unhappy, that's a big sign that says, hey, I'm giving you a sign that you ought not to go there. And one of the things I do is when I get depressed, I just try to roll in it and enjoy it. And it just makes me happy, and that goes away.
Sounds to me like you're doing process work.
From someplace inside, I just do my own sounds, and that helps me get through whatever's going on.
That's beautiful.
What can people expect from a session? Is it expensive? How much time does it take? Does the book, is it going to take a year, a month, a day?
Well, people can... It's actually very it's written in a really relaxed style, so it's not one of those books that you have to study, you know, to understand page by page. You know, you can put it next to your toilet and read it and whenever you feel like it.
But that's how I tell when there's good, authentic people when they have magazines in their bathroom.
Exactly. But no, people, you can read through it in a week or two. But I just had somebody call me the other day and say, you know, I just was flying back from Europe the other day, and I took your book with me, and that was like the fifth time I've read it. So you can continue reading it, and if you actually go through all of the exercises, then you can have a very rich experience for a long time.
How long has this book been out?
It's been out since 2002. And it's a shock to me why it isn't a bestseller, but what can you say?
Well, we'll see what we can do about that to help. If somebody wanted to do this for themselves, first they would just buy your book.
Uh-huh.
And the second, if they wanted to do it for other people, are there ways for them to learn to be a facilitator, I guess, of this technique? They all have to go to Switzerland to do this?
Well, actually, there are some facilitators in Switzerland who I've trained. But if people are in the Bay Area or in California, then it's possible to study with me here. And I've had people from different parts of the country and different parts of the world who have called me, and we've done phone sessions doing supervision. So they talk about the kind of work that they're doing with their own students, for instance, if they're music teachers, or their own clients, if they're therapists, and I give them pointers, and I have somebody in the moment in London who sends me videotapes of he sends me DVDs of his work that he's doing with clients, and then we talk together on the phone and watch the DVD at the same time, and I give him pointers on it. So that stuff's always possible.
Does it always take several sessions to do this?
Some people come for one single session, and some people stay for years.
Wow. This has like three phases, you know, talking to people about it, and then finding their inner core so that they have a strong foundation, and then taking that out into their life and their community with conflict. And getting through that.
Well, rather than saying three phases, I would say those are different aspects of the work. Not everybody who works on their unintentional music then goes and works with conflict, and not everybody who is working with conflict is also working on their music. Those are different aspects of the work, and there's lots of other aspects as well that we use in process work that I do as well as other process workers, which is working with dreams, working with physical symptoms, working with near-death experiences and altered states and comatose states, and working with all kinds of things that we do in process work.
So not only is this an emotional release, but a physical release, like broken leg or chronic bronchitis, or
absolutely cancer. Yeah.
Ooh, we didn't even talk about that. Do you have some stories about those kinds of things you've done?
Well,
our people here love stories about what really happened.
Well, I'm definitely a storyteller, so let me try to think of one. I've been kind of thinking about the unintentional music stuff, so. Let me think of a story. Well, actually, one that comes to mind, you talk about bronchitis. There was a woman who had a terrible cough for months and months, and she did many courses of antibiotics, and the cough was still there, and she came to me and we worked on that, and she said the worst part about the cough was the sound that it made. So we worked with the sound of the cough, and she said it was loud and ugly. So I said, okay, make it louder and uglier. Again, that's one basic idea is if there's a problem, let's do that more and unfold that, find out what's behind that. So she made it even louder and uglier, and we both started to make loud, ugly sounds, and she thought that that was absolutely disgusting. But she kept doing it, and eventually it turned into like a lion roaring. And so we were roaring at each other, and she said that it was a lioness, and the lioness wouldn't give up what was hers and would fight to the death for what was hers. So I said, so what would you fight for? And what's the problem? What do you need to fight for the death for? And suddenly she got very serious, and she said she was happened to be a lesbian woman who was in relationship with another woman, and she said that she would that the whole society tries to take away from her the right to love her girlfriend, and that she gets very depressed in the face of that and doesn't know how to deal with that, and that she just wants to lie down and die sometimes because of that. And and she said, but what can you do about that? You can't do anything about that. And so I repeated to her, so what can you do about that? And at that moment, she coughed really loud. So that was the answer. Her body was giving the answer. So I said, go on back into that lioness. Maybe the coughing is the lioness that's trying to express itself. And so she started to roar. And so I started to take the other role, and I said, what you're doing is immoral, and I know a great guy for you. And she just roared at me. And she realized, actually, that she was like a lioness who could fight for what was hers, and she realized that she could fight. And after that, her cough went away.
Subject for another show, but I want to bring it up. How many of our problems are somebody getting into somebody else's business that they weren't invited into? It must be absolutely awesome to watch this blooming of a soul.
It is.
That you do.
I feel so blessed. I feel so blessed doing the work that I do. I can't imagine not being able to. It's yeah, you said it.
Workshop. The schedule is on your site.
It's on my website. In the moment, as I said, I'm not traveling much because of my fatherhood situation. I'm going to be doing a workshop on relationships in Tucson, Arizona, at the end of February. But other than that, I'm basically in the Bay Area.
So, again, they just need to get in touch with you through your workshop, through your website. Do you want to give that information again, your phone number, your email address, and all that?
It's www.processworklane.com. That's L-A-N-E, processworklane.com, all one word. My phone number is 510-558-8805. And my email is lane, L-A-N-E, at processworklane.com.
What do you want people to take away from a session with you? And you can add, what do you want them to get from this show? I mean, it's been a great introduction to you and your work, but what would you hope they take with you, with them, I mean?
I hope that people take with them a faith and a trust in what is going on inside of them and what is going on in the world and what's going on in their relationships, and a trust that even the most disturbing things can, if it's unfolded, even the most disturbing things can lead us to contact, to wholeness, to community, to love, to connection, and to authenticity. And that those things that seem like they're the worst things are actually our teachers.
Yeah, to use our uncomfortness to send us in a direction of bliss and now.
That's right.
Oh, you are doing wonderful, wonderful work. And I want to thank you absolutely for giving permission to people to be free. We don't find that a lot in the world. And we'll stay in touch. We're going to have you on the show again. I'm going to go run out and buy your book.
Great.
Because I can't wait for them to send it to me from the publisher.
It's been a pleasure, and I'd love to be on anytime you want me.
It was great having you. You're an awesome guest. Remember that we have free classes still at Sound Health. Get in touch with Lily at vocalprofiling.com if you want to join us online to learn to do your own vocal profiles. And remember, it's free because we love the community. And just like Lane is doing, we think the first step is getting to know yourself. We will talk to you next week. And until then, here's some good music. Thank you.